Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the July 15th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arcola Township, Downtown Office Building Up for Sale by Jacob Hamm. The Arcola Township held a special meeting Monday evening to discuss and approve the sale of their property at 108 East Main Street. The trustees of Arcola Township unanimously approved the ordinance to sell the building as the office is moving a block northwest. They did not discuss the sale and refused to answer questions about it. The ordinance allowing the sale was read and passed. The property will be sold as is by the township, and any prospective buyer must pay for and have their own inspection conducted. The township will also not sell the property to any buyer unless they bid at least 80% of the property's assessed value. The meeting lasted less than 10 minutes. The next article, Arthur Village Board, discuss new law regarding e-bikes by Ariana Cherry. The topic discussed during general discussion at the most recent meeting of the Arthur Village Board centered around e-bikes, scooters, and other motorized devices. There are new Illinois regulations that govern these popular modes of transportation. Arthur Police Chief Elliot Tinnen explained that the new legislation took effect on July 1st. It establishes statewide regulations for e-bikes, electric scooters, skateboards, unicycles, and similar motorized vehicles. It actually went into effect on July 1st, Tinnen said. It's going to be an e-bike, a scooter, or anything else that will go over 28 miles per hour. It has to be registered, titled, and you have to have insurance on it. Tinnen said operators of all motorized devices covered by the law must be at least 16 years old, while title, registration, and insurance requirements for vehicles capable of traveling more than 28 miles per hour will not be enforced until January 1st, 2027. The age requirement is already in effect. The chief also reminded trustees that the new law prohibits the devices from being operated on sidewalks. Board members discussed whether municipalities should adopt their own regulations and were advised that communities may enact ordinances that are more restrictive than the state law but not less restrictive. No action was taken following the discussion. During department reports, Tinnen thanked numerous agencies, volunteers, and businesses that assisted with Arthur's 4th of July fireworks celebration before announcing the Arthur Police Department had received a $6,000 grant to fund the first year of the village's Flock Safely camera subscription. We were awarded $6,000, which covers both our cameras for the year, Cornwall said, and I'll be reapplying for this next year. Other news discussed and voted on. Yield signs will be replaced with stop signs along Palmer Street. Chief Tinnen recommended beginning with Palmer Street rather than replacing signs throughout town. Palmer Street is plenty wide for two vehicles both ways. There's no slowing of that street. Tinnen said, I think the street could benefit from using stop signs at those three locations. Trustees agreed to install six stop signs along Palmer Street and evaluate results before considering additional intersections. Business credit cards were approved for the administration, police department, and public works department. Tinnen explained that officers have occasionally had to purchase fuel with personal funds when the fuel system experiences problems. Nowadays, our guys shouldn't be expected to use their own, one trustee commented during the discussion. The board agreed that monthly expense reports will be reviewed to provide accountability. Approved advertising for village-owned properties on Union Street and 4th Street before considering the sale of the Union Street property. Village officials said they wanted to allow public to submit offers before acting on an existing proposal. Village's insurance bidding process following recent storm damage will be postponed. Officials noted the Illinois Municipal League Risk Management Association had been responsive during the recent roof claims. After all the claims we had, our rates did not go up because it spread out through all the municipalities in the area, officials noted during the discussion. After motors had mistakenly attempted to access Illinois Route 133 from Orchard Lane, directional signs with left and right arrows will be installed. They approved local tourism grant of $8,500 for Simply Arthur to assist with marketing efforts. A $75,000 TIF grant was also approved to assist with the construction of the new Dick Hine Community Building, located at 220 Jurgens Parkway. The next article from the Tuscola City Council, Approve Upgrades for Fire Department by David Porter. The Tuscola City Council on Monday spent $336,000 on fire department upgrades. It was noted that $36,000 of that came from various grant monies. The biggest expenditure was $250,700 for self-contained breathing apparatus, SCUBA, equipment, which has been replaced from time to time. The current equipment was said to be more than 20 years old, putting the department at risk of losing its state authorization to operate. Drew Hull, city administrator, said $270,000 was budgeted for this expense. Other equipment included dual-band radios, rescue tools, and turnout gear. Mayor Dan Kleis noted it was a lot of money, but necessary to keep firefighters safe. Overall, the equipment costs are about $16,000 more than was budgeted, Hull said. The council waived formal bidding for the equipment. The council also passed its appropriation budget after a public hearing that no one attended. They also approved their annual engineering contract with Jim Crane for road maintenance and a resolution for road maintenance. The seal coat material work has not yet been bid, Hall said. Crane's contract is for $1,200 plus 2% of the road contract costs. The maintenance work will be bid soon, with work expected to begin in August or September. He also authorized the purchase of an underground utility locator at a cost of $6,900 to Subsurface Solutions. Hall said the equipment will be able to detect plastic water lines, which have been difficult to find in the past. Under the consent agenda, the council approved a back-to-school event for the Douglas County Health Department for August 1st at Irvin Park. Kleiss also read two recent thank you letters from the city received, including one from Students Against Destructive Decisions, expressing appreciation for city officials and signed by all of the students. In his written report, Hall said the Kiwanis Club has formed a committee to look at replacing playground equipment at Irvin Park. He said he is participating with the committee in hopes of finding recommendations and community or grant support. Conclusions and recommendations will come back to the council, he said. The next article from the Arthur School Board holds first meeting with new super by David Porter. The Arcola School Board met last week with new superintendent Tara Chandler. The scant agenda including approving bids for fuel, milk, and bread and approving the school calendar. Prairie Farms won the milk bid while Alpha Baking Company won the bread bid and Effingham Equity was the low bidder on fuel. The board has also approved the resignation of Ashton Carson, and Chandler gave an update on summer projects, including cleaning, painting, general maintenance, new fencing, and the playground. The next article, Utility Watchdog Warns of Rising Water Rates as Regulators Consider Requests, by Maggie Doherty. Consumers across Illinois could be facing higher water and sewage bills as the state's largest private water utilities seek rate increases and permission to merge. Illinois American Water, the state's largest private water utility, is seeking a $142 million rate increase, which would raise typical water costs for its 357,000 residents by about $14 per month. Typical wastewater customers would also see an additional increase of about $28 per month. Illinois American Water Supply serviced about half of Douglas County, including Tuscola, Arcola, and Villa Grove. Aqua Illinois, the second largest private water utility, serves over 90,000 customers in the state and has asked regulators to approve $26.5 million rate increase, which would raise average combined water and supply treatments by $23 a month. But as the Illinois Commerce Commission weighs these rate cases, is also evaluating a proposed merger between the two water utilities' parent companies. The Citizens Utility Board, a watchdog group, is calling on the ICC to reject the merger. The Consumer Advocate Group warns that approval of the merger between Illinois American parent company American Water and Aqua's parent company Essential Utilities would allow unprecedented market consolidation. Illinois American and Quok have a long history of consumer complaints about escalating bills and poor service, and our expert testimony shows that there is no reason to believe that the merger will fix these problems, CUB Executive Director Sarah Moskowitz said in a statement. That's why we urge the ICC to reject this deal or set strong guardrails to hold these companies accountable for their long-suffering customers. After Illinois American purchased Prairie Path Water Company last month, which formerly provided water to customers in 15 counties in north and central Illinois, CUB estimates that approving the merger with Illinois American and Aqua parent companies would mean that over 99% of regulated water and wastewater utility customers in the state would be served by American Water and its affiliates. The fact that Illinois' two biggest private water companies are seeking higher rates in 2026 as one parent company tries to purchase another just proves CUB's point that the companies are more interested in seeking higher profits than actually serving the public good, Moskowitz said. If approved by the regulators, the merger would expect it to close in the first quarter of 2027, according to a joint news release from the companies. What customers can expect. Both water utilities say the rate increases are necessary to pay for critical infrastructure upgrades and upkeep of aging water pipelines, storage tanks, and equipment. If approved in full by the ICC, Aqua Illinois customers can expect to see a rate increase take effect in late April 2027. The increase would be roughly 15% for average residential customers who pay for wastewater collection and treatment in addition to their water bills, bringing monthly bills to around $178 and nearly 30% for residential customers who do not pay wastewater treatment, bringing their bills to around $102 per month, according to the company's public notice. The company said the request also reflects its need to replace lead service lines and defend against cybersecurity threats. Cub objected to Aqua Illinois' filing, saying it was driven more by shareholder interest and the company's outrageous request to increase its shareholder return on equity from 9.6% to 10.9%, which Cub said would make it the highest in the state's major utilities. Rebecca Lossley, president of Illinois American, said the company's $142 million request was driven by approximately $577 million needed to modernize and strengthen its water and wastewater systems in 2026 and 2027. These investments directly benefit the communities we proudly serve and provide our customers with even more reliable service and improved water quality, from treatment to the tap, Lossley said. It underscores our employees' commitment to the health and safety of our customers and the communities we serve. Like with Aqua Illinois, CUB called out Illinois American's request to bump its shareholder return on equity from 9.84% to 10.75%. The watchdog urged consumers of Illinois American to attend or submit comments ahead of a public ICC forum in Bolingbrook on July 14th. Customers can submit comments online or by calling the ICC's Consumer Services Division at 1-800-524-0795 on weekdays between 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. The forum has not been publicly scheduled regarding the Aqua Illinois rate case, as it is in an earlier stage, but impacted customers are still able to submit comments to the ICC website. Governor J.B. Pritzker recently signed legislation that requires the ICC to offer public forums for customer feedback on future rate cases, although the bill does not take effect until January 1, 2027. The ICC is expected to rule on the proposed merger in November, on the Illinois American case rate in December, and an Aqua Illinois case in May of 2027. If approved, Illinois American water rate increase would take effect in January 2027 and Aqua Illinois in late April 2027. And the last first page article, Illinois Agriwoman to honor Arthur Farm Family, from Bloomington. The Illinois Agriwoman, IAW, announced three Legacy Farm Family Awards winners for the Generations of Women in Agriculture Across America, GO-AG3, initiative. These families include first place Schultz Miller Farm Family from northwestern Illinois, southern Wisconsin, and central Iowa, second place Green Farm Family from Arthur, and third place O'Brien Farm Family from Grants Pass, Oregon. Four generations of women in the Green family have been involved in agriculture, dating back to great-great-grandmother Dorothy, who was the best farm wife and farm supporter throughout her early years as a stay-at-home mom and into her elder years. The farm and family were always at the forefront of her thoughts, prayers, and actions. The IAW said, she and great-grandpa made strategic land purchases and set moral and ethical standards that have allowed successive generations to thrive in productive agriculture, the family said. The three living generations are now playing major roles at the Heritage Family Farms and have developed alternative and entrepreneurial streams of income for the family. Geraldine, Monica, and Makina have been involved in 4-H, FFA, Cub Scouts, COSD 305, Board of Education, PTA, their church, and Moultrie Douglas County Fair Board and Farm Bureau. What makes these three women especially deserving of recognition is not only their professional excellence, but their deep commitment to service. Agriculture thrives when communities thrive, said Gregory Peterson, Farm Credit Illinois, retired Vice President, Ag Financial Services. The Generations of Women in Agriculture Across America, GO-AG3, initiative began in the fall of 2025 to recognize the women who have provided support and encouragement, the women of their families, to pursue non-traditional roles in agriculture. The Illinois Agriwomen have invited the ladies of the three legacy farm families to attend the GO-AG3 celebration on Friday, August 21st in Bloomington Normal. They'll be filled with educational and professional development opportunities in addition to meeting the legacy farm families in person. They'll be honored at the Heartland Community College Agriculture Complex and for the award presentation during the lunch at the Distill Brewery and Beer Hall in Normal. Illinois Agriwoman is a statewide nonprofit with membership across the state, with women involved in agriculture, production, industry, and stewardship. More information and registration for the celebration of the legacy families are available on the Illinois Agriwoman website, illinoisagriwomen.org/goag3/. The next article, Atwood Man pleads not guilty to child sexual assault by Jacob Hamm. Zachariah McCullough pleaded not guilty to five counts of child sexual abuse at his preliminary court hearing last Wednesday. McCullough was arrested on June 22nd after an investigation began in May. Police were called to his home in Atwood on May 30th after it was reported a family member ran away after physical and verbal altercations with McCullough. The family member was interviewed by the Douglas County Sheriff's Office and was briefly taken into protective custody. They were interviewed by the Child Advocacy Center in Charleston a few days later, where they described being molested by McCullough and forced to perform sexual acts on him. During the interviews, the family members said that the abuse began in 2024 when they lived in Colorado. When they moved to Atwood in May 2024, the abuse continued, according to the report made by family members, which was confirmed by the witnesses who worked for the Atwood Police Department and the Sheriff's Office during the hearing. McCullough's defense attorney, Kevin Nolan, cross-examined one of the witnesses about the specifics of the case, such as what day he was arrested and if family members had been medically examined. According to the witness, the alleged victim had not been medically examined. Nolan also asked if McCullough's wife, Mary McCullough, was interviewed as part of the investigation. The prosecution confirmed she had not been interviewed, as is the writing of this story. The prosecution was not questioned by Nolan's questioning of the witnesses and specifics of the dates of the events. The prosecution indicated probable cause to charge him with 5 counts of abuse. McCullough will remain in custody at the Douglas County Sheriff's Office until his trial, which is scheduled for September 14th through 18th. He will have a jury trial. All suspects are considered innocent until proven in a court of law. The next article is the I'm Just Saying column by Mike Carroll. Last week, leading up to and including July 8th, turned into a heartwarming week for me. It was good enough to make me forget this. Going on 4 weeks now, sinus stuffed headache, constant hacking, kill me now cold. I've been a little emotionally down during our current celebration season. Don't ask me why. Perhaps it was the seeming unrally of our nation, or maybe my sinuses. But then other people's optimistic and reasoned thoughts rekindled the kind of hope I'd hoped I had for our nation's soul that had slowly been chiseled away, worn down by our dogmatic, often mean-spirited, divisive political discourse. First was an article by Joseph Sternberg concerning the observation of America by the flood of tourists from around the world here to attend the World Cup. He argued that once our visitors stepped outside our large cities, they discovered an America they had not understood, given their view from various forms of media. Their stereotypical expectation was one of angry nation adrift, unmoored from our founders' aspirational yearnings. They saw our new transactional response to world events as one abandoning traditional American values and allies. It reeked of material advantage and unbridled power-seeking that has made us ordinary, like everyone else in the world, no longer an exceptional, shining city on the hill. But Sternberg said that our foreign visitors found something else, something still unique in America, people who actually believe in something which he called earnestness. He reported that our visitors often commented that Americans are always talking about God. They really mean this whole freedom thing. They unabashedly fly the American flag from their homes and adorn everything with red, white, and blue. Sternberg concluded, we are still largely united by an idea expressed in our founding. The achievement of July 1776 was to articulate an idea that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are unalienable rights endowed by the Creator that could justify, sustain, and reward the kind of earnestness. And we've been able to do so for 250 years, despite our own periodic failures to live up to our idea, is an achievement to which we should be proud. Then last Tuesday, Peggy Pritchard wrote a similarly themed, wonderful piece that also involved talking to the tourists who came to the World Cup. Peggy said they came with preconceived, sometimes negative, notions of America shaped by the news and social media they consumed back home. Instead, they found positive things about our country. She quotes one Australian visitor said, I feel like I've lied to my entire life about America. If you log on to the news, everything's bad, everything's terrible. It's not. It's absolutely amazing. Peggy then went on to argue that we need to personally look for what's good about our country without ignoring imperfections that need attending to, and not be overly influenced by the tsunami of negative news. Yes, no news programs regularly report planes that land safely. This is all influenced a talk I gave as Master of Ceremonies on the July 8th at Douglas County, honoring the first public reading of our Declaration of Independence. Sponsored by Tuscola Tourism, the Douglas County Museum, and Stephen A. Douglas Chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, it was an impressive ceremony attended by an estimated crowd of 200 people or so. It included many impressive participants. George Frank Lincoln led the Pledge of Allegiance, the Tuscola High School Honor Choir sang the National Anthem, local editor David Porter recited our National Creed, Bev McGee, regent of the Stephen A. Douglas DAR, presented an award. Historian Kim McGree, dressed as first reader, colonialist Cornell John Nixon, flawlessly read the Declaration of Independence. Newman Honor Guard gave a 21-gun salute, ending with renowned retired Colonel Larry Eisnogel playing a flawless taps. I, of course, tried to first loosen up the crowd with my rousing opening 10-minute talk, starting with correctly and proudly announcing semi-sesquicentennial, challenging the audience to say it 3 times fast. I stressed why one revolutionary sentence in our Declaration shook the world to its foundations, declaring free people being endowed with certain inalienable rights, however altering expectations of the potential of human freedom and achievement. I suggested that being created equal by a creator logically infers our rights are inalienable because they flow from God, that King George was, in the eye of God, no higher than his lowest servant, and that a functioning freedom requires an ethic of golden rule, treating others as you would like to be treated yourself. Treating others with the dignity and respect you would want for ourselves allows our civil society and a functioning politic. Clearly, 350 million citizens can't simultaneously achieve their freedom and liberty goals. It's hard enough to reach equilibrium within a marriage without mutual respect, compromise, and affording the other partner common decency. Madison's Federalist No. 10 warned that radical fractionalism from within is the greatest threat to this great experiment in self-government. Following the golden rule mitigates this threat. At the end, women swooned, babies quit crying, and men openly wept. This is, of course, after Colonel Eisenogel's tear-swelling playing of the taps, although I'd like to think it was a delayed reaction to my speech. It doesn't matter. They didn't need to hear my message at all, because our nation's foundational ideas are already embedded in the crowd's DNA as children of liberty. This love of country based on a noble ideal, not fully realized, but always there, forever yearning for a more perfect union. Fully aware of our parties and leaders are mortal and thus flawed, many of most cling instead to God and the founding ideals of America and surrounding politics that bind us into a love and belief that this is a whole freedom thing. The next article, 95th Moultrie Douglas County Fair, set for July 26th through August 2nd. The 95th Moultrie Douglas County Fair will celebrate its milestone year July 26th through August 2nd at the fairgrounds in Arthur, offering a full week of livestock shows, carnival rides, pageants, entertainment, motorsports, and family-friendly activities. The fair officially opens Sunday, July 26th with a sheep show at 10 a.m., followed by the goat show at 2 p.m. and a community church service at 6 p.m. Livestock competition continues throughout the week, beginning Monday with a 4-H poultry show at 5 p.m., the 4-H rabbit, small pets, and cat show at 6 p.m. Monday evening also features the opening of the carnival from 6 to 10 p.m. with a ticket special, followed by Little Miss Pageant at 6 p.m. and the Miss and Junior Miss Pageants at 7 p.m. Tuesday's schedule includes 4-H large livestock shows beginning at 5 p.m. for goats, swine, and cattle. The carnival returns from 6 to 10 p.m. for wristband night, and annual talent show takes center stage at 7 p.m. in the South Grandstand. Wednesday has been designated Youth Ag Day. Activities begin with a Touch a Truck event from 5:30 to 8 p.m., followed by the 4-H Foundation Project Auction at 6:30 p.m. Carnival rides continue during another wristband night from 6 to 10 p.m., while the band Sisters and Company performs at 7 p.m. on the Midway stage. Thursday night features Carnival Night from 6 to 10 p.m. during another wristband promotion. The Home Run Derby begins at 6:30 p.m. followed by Battle Creek at 7 p.m. on the Midway stage. Friday evening includes Carnival Rides from 6 to 10 p.m. with tickets only, while taking the ITPA Tractor Pull takes place at 6 p.m. in the South Arena. Saturday, August 1st is packed with activities, beginning with a cattle show at 10 a.m. Community events include a 5K walk-run at 7 a.m., car show at 9:30 a.m., baby pageant at 10 a.m., dog show at 11 a.m., and additional activities throughout the afternoon, including a 3-on-3 basketball tournament. The Mackville Band will perform from 3 to 5 p.m. in the Midway stage before country music artist Braxton Keith, with opening act Dalton Davis, takes the South Grandstand stage at 7 p.m. Carnival rides will operate from 6 to 10 p.m. with tickets only. The fair concludes Sunday, August 2nd, with the swine show beginning at 10 a.m. Food vendors will be open from 5 to 10 p.m. Monday through Friday and 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday, offering a variety of their fair favorites throughout the week. The annual fair continues to provide opportunities for area 4-H members and exhibitors to showcase their projects while offering entertainment and activities for all ages. From livestock competitions and pageants to carnival rides, live music, tractor pulls, and family events, organizers expect another memorable celebration of one of the area's longest-running summer traditions. For additional information about the 95th Moultrie Douglas County Fair, visit www.moultriedouglascountyfair.org or call 217-317-0964. The next article is Ramblin' Man by David Porter, Creating New Words and Terms for No Good Reason. Mark Twain said the difference between the right word and the nearly right word is the difference between lightning and lightning bug. Throughout the ages, writers and others have strived to come up with better words or at least more colorful terms to perhaps stave off boredom or in the interest of specificity. Sometimes it's just a game. I can't think of anything along the lines that is more curious than the terms used for a group of birds and animals. A gaggle of geese, a murder of crows, a romp of otters, a convocation of eagles, flamboyance of flamingos, parliament of owls, colony of penguins, a school of fish, a shiver of sharks, a float of crocodiles, a knot of snakes, a grumble of maggots, a scourge of mosquitoes, and a clue of worms. Some of these terms date back to 15th century England, where, according to Google, it was a game of wit among the upperclassmen to show off one's cleverness and observational skills. I want in on that. I can be witty, I can also be witless. Ask my wife. I started to look for groups of things that have no collective term. I can tell you that after wasting a day and a half, there aren't very many. I started with animals. There are quite a few that roam alone, so they're not normally in groups. You don't often see an avalanche of snow leopards, an armful of octopi, a shell of sea turtles, or a pool of axolotl. I don't even know what those are, but you can't stop me from assigning them a group name. According to Google, there are several hundred names for group of animals and birds, also called venery. But the word group isn't close to being a most substituted word in the English language. That title belongs to the word drunk, with more than 2,200 synonyms, many of which can't be printed here. Wasted, hammered, plastered, trash, smashed, sloshed, juiced, zonked, intoxicated, inebriated, impaired, you get the drift. Some of the terms for group make no sense to me. Maybe they made sense to someone at some point, others reflect the nature of the grouping. I came up with quite a few. A coward of quitters, a blunder of errors, a dunce of idiots, a parole of politicians. My selection was heavily influenced by reading the news that day. Some words are way overused and lack imagination, like whatever, amazing, literally, and even like that can mean anything. So in high school, a bleacher of pals tried to come up with a new word that would be used indeterminately when they came up with the word bope. Whatever, like, that's not even a word, dude. It means nothing and yet can mean anything you want. I've made up a few words over the years, none of which I remember and none of which caught on. You might say I've created a mumble jumbletron of new words, bope. This is what I do when I don't want to do things I'm supposed to be doing. I call it research. When I do it for a lot, they say it's a wriggle of research. A wrangle of research? Why use phrases like a body of or a plethora of and a collection of when you can have so much more fun with it? I do a rigmarole of search, a slew, a ream, a bundle, a bunch, a scad, a wad, a load, oodles and acres and gobs. It's a lot. I do the heavy lifting so you don't have to. You're welcome. In the last article, Illinois reviewing Department of J's threat to prosecute state election officials over non-citizen voting by Peter Hancock. The Illinois State Board of Elections said Wednesday it is reviewing a letter from the U.S. Department of Justice threatening criminal prosecution of any official who allows non-citizens to cast ballots and requesting information about how the state intends to prevent non-citizens voting. The letter, dated Tuesday, July 7th, was addressed to ISBE Executive Director Bernadette Matthews. It was similar to letters reportedly sent to top election officials in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. It also appeared to be part of a multi-pronged effort by the Trump administration to crack down on illegal voting by non-citizens, something election officials said is exceedingly rare. In addition to Tuesday's letter threatening prosecutors, DOJ is also suing Illinois and dozens of other states for access to the state's complete, unredacted voter registration lists, including sensitive information such as voters' dates of birth, driver's license numbers, and partial Social Security numbers. The federal government has not been successful in any of those lawsuits thus far. The Trump administration is also proposing new regulations that would prohibit the U.S. Postal Service from transmitting mail-in or absentee ballots to or from voters who are not included in a federally approved list of U.S. citizens who are eligible to vote, though a federal judge has blocked that effort. Tuesday's letter, DOJ's demands. The three-page letter sent Tuesday was signed by Harmeet Dhillon, who heads DOJ's Civil Rights Division. It cites several federal statutes that make it a crime for non-citizens to vote in federal, state, or local elections or to falsely represent themselves as citizens. It concludes with a warning that any election official, including the chief election officer of the state, who knowingly retains non-citizens on the state's voter registration list or facilitates non-citizens in receiving and casting ballots, will be subject to criminal liability. Department of Justice, Civil Rights Division, would like to assist your state in complying with these federal laws, the letter states. Please respond to this letter within 5 days, informing us of how the state of Illinois intends to ensure it is complying with these federal laws at both state and local levels, and how the department can assist in these efforts. President Donald Trump has long claimed without evidence that voting fraud, including fraudulent mail ballots and illegal votes by non-citizen, cost him the 2020 election. He's continued to make unfounded claims about non-citizens voting since winning back the presidency in 2024. In August 2025, DOJ demanded Illinois election officials hand over the state's complete, unredacted voter registration database, saying it needed that information to determine whether Illinois was complying with a federal law requiring states to maintain accurate, up-to-date voter rolls. That is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye, and see you again next week.